The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
The very definition of terrorist is being changed right before our eyes, not only from the laughable leftist pundits and politicians, but from our current Department of Justice. And they are nothing to laugh at because they have the teeth to come after those who meet their invented and convenient profile. I'm Bob Siegel, your host. It's always good to be with you. My friends, one of the most talented stand-up comics in the business is Jeff Foxworthy. While admittedly, he's famous for only one routine, more or less, it's still a great routine, one that he constantly updates because it never gets old. Most of you have heard it already, I'm sure. The act, of course, is called You Might Be a Redneck. Now, that kind of harmless jest is often taken the wrong way in today's oversensitive society, but in Foxworthy's case, he means no disrespect. He considers himself to be a redneck as well. It's all good-natured fun, nothing cruel, and he has a bottomless supply of examples in his joke arsenal. If you've ever made change in the offering plate, you might be a redneck. You may be a redneck if your lifetime goal is to own a fireworks stand. If you own a home with wheels on it and several cars without wheels, you just might be a redneck. If you think loading the dishwasher means getting your wife drunk, you might be a redneck. A hilarious act. He deserves all the fame and popularity he received from it. Well, today's show is going to be a takeoff on Jeff Foxworthy's material, a satire, so to speak. Only this satire will not be nearly as enjoyable because, as you know, these days, truth is becoming stranger than fiction. I'm not the only one saying that. Everybody is saying that. Our proud American heritage has a picture, a standard picture of a blind Lady Liberty weighing the scales of justice because justice is supposed to be blind, not biased, not weaponized, not politicized, not convenient to a current administration hoping to frighten and silence the free speech of any opposing view, especially during an election year, but blind. And so, my friends, brace yourselves. In the year 2022, the topic of discussion is not whether or not you might be a redneck, but whether or not you might be a terrorist. More correctly put, whether or not you might be called a terrorist without in fact being one or even being anything remotely close to one. You see, the definition of terrorism changes more often than a battery powered by the state of California. A while back, not too long ago, our country used an honest definition of terrorism. That is, generally speaking, one who belongs to an organization which wants to spread its cause through violence, whether such violence includes murder, hostages kidnapped, you name it. The point being that they are issuing some kind of demand with a threat that the terror will continue until the demands are met. There are many examples, the PLO, Hamas, ISIS, all examples of terrorist organizations. Obviously, Al-Qaeda, with its horrific attack on 9/11, slitting the throats of plane stewardesses and ramming planes into both the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, murdering some 3,000 people in cold blood. Those are the terrorists. But that kind of terror doesn't seem to concern our current administration, which made a deal with the Taliban before pulling our troops out and leaving many Americans behind in Afghanistan, the very country which had once harbored Osama bin Laden, the mastermind of 9/11. Neither are they concerned about the violence of Antifa, a domestic terrorist group, or the many acts of murder and burnt down buildings in the summer of 2020 called the Summer of Love by the liberals. Neither are they concerned when violent thugs are arrested and immediately released without bail, or the slimy thieves who are allowed to openly steal store merchandise so long as it doesn't exceed $999 worth of merchandise. No, my friends, those are not the terrorists or people who commit terrorist-type acts. Not them. They aren't terrorists. But you might be if you point out that the many acts of real honest-to-goodness terrorism are coming in the name of a violent religion, a religion with a scripture called the Quran, which literally commands jihad. If you point that out, simply repeating what the terrorists themselves claim, instead of calling Islam by its new politically correct definition, a religion of peace merely hijacked by a few nutcase terrorists, well then you, not they, you might be the terrorist. Speaking of religion, if you honestly do adhere to a peaceful religion but believe intelligent design should be taught in the classroom, you might be a terrorist. But religion is only one example of terrorism these days. There are so many others. They come in all shapes and sizes. If you don't believe that your tax dollars should have to pay for the education of a student who took out a loan in good faith, promising to pay it back himself when your own children aren't even going to college, but you have to pay for somebody else's child, well, you don't like that? You might be a terrorist. If you believe in gas-powered vehicles, you might be a terrorist. If you point out that electric-powered cars get their electricity from power sources that often include gas and coal, you might be a terrorist. Just watch. I'm telling you, after they have everyone on electric cars, they'll tell us to stop driving electric cars too. They already tried to float that one in California a few weeks ago because they understand all too well that the electric grid is powered by more than wind and sun. Right now, yes, an electric car is a politically correct car, but soon they will complain about the same fossil fuels needed to power sources for electricity, including those sources that plug into electric cars. In time, we will simply be told to stop driving, period. They'll put us on their lightning-fast public transportation systems, always reliable, always prompt. And there'll be so many people riding them, the line will go around the block. You'll be taking the bus when you need to get to work or pick up your kid at a soccer game. How fun is that? Or maybe they'll let you use a horse and buggy, provided your horse doesn't break wind, because that too leads to global warming, according to AOC and other amorphous geniuses. Sooner or later, someone will just suggest that the momentum and energy produced by Governor Newsom's big mouth become our power supply. But good luck to anyone who makes that suggestion, because he will promptly be called a terrorist. My friends, the prediction that they will take away the liberty of electric cars after having already taken away the liberty of gas-powered cars is a very easy forecast. Just look at the pattern. Just look at how these governments responded to COVID. Speaking of which, if you don't believe we should have shut down our entire republic in 2020 for a disease with a 99% recovery rate, you might be a terrorist. They'll accuse you of not caring about life, but if you care about life, such as the life of an unborn baby, well, you might be a terrorist. In fact, if you care about a baby recently born and protest new laws in certain places allowing the doctors to commit actual infanticide because the mother had intended a late-term abortion and it got botched up by the child accidentally being born, if you care about that, it means you are against women's rights and you might be a terrorist. On the other hand, if you truly champion women's rights to the point of calling for the removal of men from women's sports teams simply because this man claims to identify as a woman, you might be a terrorist. If you complain at a PTA meeting, complain about the way your children are being indoctrinated because you don't want your 6-year-old made to feel confused or guilty because of alleged white privilege, which no kid is going to understand in a million years, or because you don't want your little boy to be told that he might really be a little girl, or because you insist on being informed when such so-called sex education is going on, you might be a terrorist. If you care about the Constitution, or talk too much about the Constitution, or refer to it in any manner other than the way a leftist judge would interpret it, you might be a terrorist. In other words, if you actually read the Constitution for yourself and quote what it actually says, you might be a terrorist. One example is quoting the Second Amendment. If you claim to believe in the Second Amendment, well, if you claim it too strongly, too enthusiastically, with too much passion, you just might be a terrorist. And if, along with forfeiting the right to defend yourself, you don't also go along with defunding the police, your only other source of protection, you might be a terrorist. And if you don't affirm releasing criminals without bail while the police are being defunded, while you're not allowed to defend yourself, well, it shows a lack of compassion, which is nothing more than your own terrorism. So much for the Second Amendment. What about the First Amendment? If you utilize the First Amendment and call BLM protests violent, you might be a terrorist. Indeed, your very words condemning the violence are the real violence, while the violence you object to is nothing but democracy in action. And if you call it anything but democracy in action, you might be a terrorist. It goes on. If you believe the 2020 election was stolen by the Democrats, you might be a terrorist. However, and this is very important, if you do not believe that the 2016 election was stolen by Donald Trump, a claim that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats made the entire 4 years Donald Trump was in office, you might be a terrorist. If you don't believe Mar-a-Lago should have been raided without proper cause, that it was only a fishing expedition, a raid in search of a crime, you might be a terrorist. If you don't believe Joe Biden when he says he knows nothing about Hunter's dealings with the Ukraine and China, if you want to point out that Biden bragged about threatening the Ukraine government if they didn't discontinue the investigation of Hunter, a boastful, jovial video easily available and seen by millions, but if you merely point this out or point out that the FBI found all kinds of problems with Hillary's server problems they talked about with her server, her emails, and Hillary's destruction of her BlackBerry and bleach bit of her computer, they found these things, but they said they weren't going to prosecute her anyway. If you point out any of these parallel narratives suggesting any kind of inconsistency, suggesting that an FBI unconcerned about these proven crimes, but instead concerned about a former president's medical records and his wife's underwear drawer, is a weaponized, politicized, inconsistent, corrupt, crooked FBI, well, if you say that, you might be a terrorist. If you do not believe in open borders, you might be a terrorist. If you claim that you are all for immigration but simply want the immigration to be legal, that you don't care about the color of a person's skin or what country they come from, you just want it to be legal, well, if you point that out, you are a racist and a xenophobe. And not only that, you might also be a terrorist. If you aren't willing to compare Governor Ron DeSantis to Hitler, because he transported 50 illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, a place which prides itself on being a sanctuary city until they have an opportunity to actually be a sanctuary city, you point that out, you might be a terrorist. Speaking of Martha's Vineyard, Martha's Vineyard has a public sign. All are welcome here. Hate has no business here. Well, isn't that special? Isn't that nice? This is moving me close to tears. A community against hate. What an original thought. Why, no one else would ever have come up with an idea like that. Yeah, catch this. We are against hate. Of course, hate is defined as being anything other than woke, making very sure you share their opinions, even if they just proved that they themselves do not live up to their own opinions. But I suggest you don't point that inconsistency out to anyone, because if you do, well, you know, you might be a terrorist. By the way, NBC recently deleted an embarrassing tweet from a refugee foundation leader that they had published, which said the following: Florida Governor DeSantis sending asylum seekers to Martha's Vineyard is like me taking my trash out and just driving to different areas where I live and just throwing my trash there. Trash? Trash? You never hear people who believe in protected borders calling immigrants trash. So who are the real racists here? But don't dare ask that. Don't dare point that out. And don't point out that Joe Biden shipped immigrants all over the country by plane, by night. No, instead, you need to show concern for the 50 migrants at Martha's Vineyard, migrants who took the trip voluntarily and signed up to go. We must be concerned that poor Martha's Vineyard doesn't have the infrastructure to handle this. But supposedly Florida does. Supposedly Florida and Texas have the infrastructure. There have been 2 million illegal crossings into the United States from our southern border so far this year. That doesn't concern the left. 53 migrants were found dead in a trailer in San Antonio, Texas. That doesn't concern them. Joe Biden signals a green light to anyone who wants to come to America, even if to get here, they have to drown in the Rio Grande or die of thirst in the desert or get raped or murdered by the cartel on their way. That doesn't concern them. People from countries all over the world, including countries that consider themselves enemies of the United States officially, are crossing our southern borders. That doesn't concern them. A governor from Florida gives a sanctuary city a chance to be a sanctuary city in deeds along with words by sending a mere 50 people, 50 who volunteered. That concerns them. But make very sure your own concerns mirror and parrot the left's concerns, or you might be a terrorist. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Dr. Everett Piper is no stranger to our program. He's a retired university administrator, conservative commentator, and columnist for the Washington Times. He was president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University from August 2002 until his retirement in May of 2019. He's the author of many articles and some books, Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. Currently, he's running for the office of commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. Everett Piper, welcome back to our program.
It's good to be on your show, Bob. Hey, by the way, great monologue to start the show. I did listen to every bit of it and spot on.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm going to give you an opportunity because I know you're quite opinionated on every point that I made. Well, let's talk a little bit about your campaign first. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, to hear that you've entered the arena of politics. You've certainly been a political commentator, but obviously that's not the same thing. So for those who don't take much interest in local politics, a lot of people follow national and world, and they don't really know much about what's going on locally. Tell our audience what a county commissioner does specifically, and why you, as an evangelical Christian and vocal conservative, felt it was important to run.
Well, in Oklahoma, the county commissioner is responsible for the county's budget, really. And by statute in Oklahoma, every county has to have three commissioners, and only three. So essentially, what you have is in the county, you have three individuals that are going to make the decisions by majority vote. And obviously the math there works out this way. If you can get one person to agree with you, you're controlling the budget of the county, how all of the tax revenue is going to be spent. Now, a lot of people assume that the county commissioner is only responsible for roads and bridges and those types of things, because those are the things that you touch on a daily basis. But really, the county commissioner's responsibilities and authority and control goes much beyond that because of financial and budgetary implications there. So in Osage County, it's a very rural county, more cows literally than there are people. It's ranching county, it has a lot of horses, a lot of cows, good people, some small communities. But Bob, why am I doing this? It's not because I want to, because frankly, I don't need to add county commissioner to my resume. I don't want the title. I don't care about it. The reason I'm doing it is I was minding my own business one day as I've retired from the college presidency. I proved I wasn't very smart. I went out and bought some horses and cows, and I'm enjoying doing that as I write for the Washington Times and continue to speak at various different places. Minding my own business, I got a phone call from the county sheriff. He essentially said, hey, I want a conservative Christian to run for county commissioner because we don't have that right now, and I want somebody that I can trust to work with. Would you run for county commissioner? And I thought about it, and I'd been asked to run for other offices before. I'm not trying to boast, but I'd been asked to run for everything from the Senate to the Congress to superintendent of education for the state of Oklahoma, and I've always said no. And the reason I've said no is I don't want to. I don't feel called to. I didn't want to get involved in the dirty work of campaigning. But for some reason, my wife and I talked this one over, and we both concluded maybe this is a way for us to serve the people that we've chosen as our neighbors. And maybe, just maybe, conservatives have the whole equation backwards. We're focusing so much on the federal government and on the state government. We're not giving any attention to local government. And maybe we've got it backwards. And maybe the whole COVID situation, Bob, taught us something.
Yeah, I was going to say, during COVID, we did kind of learn that our local government made a great big difference, because everything about COVID was administered differently depending on where you lived.
There you go. If you lived in a town that had a sane mayor and a sane chief of police or sheriff, if you lived in a community where people believed in freedom and basically honored constitutional guarantees, if they left you alone to live your life, to run your restaurant, to run your gas station, to go to church, you, if you lived in that community, enjoyed a lot more freedom than you did if you lived someplace like Tulsa, Oklahoma, where G.T. Bynum, the mayor down there, played Little Napoleon and shut the whole place down. I mean, it's crazy. But if you lived up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, where people had a head on their shoulders and had a modicum of sanity left and believed that people should be left alone to live their own lives, and they shouldn't be told what to put on their face and when to go to church and whether or not to go to a restaurant, you know, just that 45-mile difference made a huge difference in the way we lived our lives. And why? Local politics, local control, local authority. I've stumbled across something recently in my reading as I was preparing to run for this county commissioner job. George Washington had a favorite verse. And I didn't know what it was. He quoted it over 50 times in his correspondence with his fellow founding fathers. And that verse was Micah 4:4. Every man shall live under his own vine and his own fig tree and shall not be afraid. Now, it's kind of a weird, obscure verse that I've heard before, but, you know, why was Washington so fond of that? Well, stop and think about it. It's your vine. It's your fig tree. It's your driveway. It's your house. It's your school. It's your church. They're your kids. It's your ranch. It's your farm. Leave us alone. Let us sit under our own vine and our own fig tree, and we won't be afraid. Stop trying to tell us what to do and take our property.
Especially with our children.
Yeah. So this whole issue of every man shall sit under his own vine and his own fig tree is the quintessential poster child of local responsibility, local control, local authority, and good government. And the further you get away from that model, that example that is biblical, the further you get away from your own individual liberties and freedoms. So long way around the barn for me to try to share with you why I have decided to run for a lower office rather than higher office, because I believe that lower office, that local office, is actually the higher calling, because that's where our liberties are grounded and rooted. And if we got people with common sense and sense that's common, a biblical worldview, and they understand the importance of freedom being their highest good, then you're going to enjoy a lot more of what our Constitution and what the Bible guarantees us than you would otherwise.
You said there's a big difference between someone who wants a title and someone who is willing to serve.
Yes. If I learned, I learned a few things, hopefully, over the course of being a college president and whatnot. But one of the things that I'll never forget is when I was offered the college presidency at Oklahoma Wesleyan back in 2002, the place was in crisis. It was ready to go bankrupt. It was a mess. And I didn't want the job. I did not want the job. I turned it down. It's a long story. I turned it down, and my wife felt I made a mistake, so she basically made me call them back up and ask them if they still wanted me, and the place was in such disarray that nobody else wanted the job, so lo and behold, I ended up being a college president at a bankrupt institution that was in a complete financial and missional disaster. But I had an old sage who had been on the Board of Trustees for 100 years come into my office one day. He knew that I was a deer in the headlights. He knew I didn't want the job. He had watched all the drama of me being uncommitted and confused in the way the whole search process went. So here I was, this young 42-year-old kid. I didn't know what I was doing, didn't want the job, and I'm in this mess. And this old sage came into my office one day, and he said, look, one of the best leaders that I've found in my entire life, and this guy was 80 some years old, he said, the best leaders that I have found in my life are those that don't want the job rather than those that do. Those that are willing to do it because it needs to be done and done well, but not those who are so hungry for the job that they'll sell their soul. He said, you are the kind of leader we want. We don't want the guy that wants the job. We want the guy who doesn't, but is willing to do it. And I think that's a very critical difference. If you're stumbling across people that want to be a senator so bad they can taste it, don't vote for them. If you know somebody that wants to be a congressman so bad that he'll run roughshod over everybody else to get that title and get that position, wrong guy. You want the people who don't necessarily want the title or want the salary. They don't want the job, but they're willing to do it because it's just the right thing to do.
Well, and in that vein, isn't it true that George Washington originally did not want the job or title as president? And that's what made him such a good president. He reluctantly took the job.
And he eagerly stepped away from the job once he had done it. He didn't have to hang on to it and be king for life. And America was blessed accordingly.
Isn't that the way politics was originally meant to be? It was supposed to be like you go to Washington, you do your time, then you return to your farm or your trade. It was like jury duty originally.
Yeah, I think that was the ideal. And Washington certainly set a good example for that. But, you know, like Lord Acton said, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's the lot of politics, that people that are attracted to it just are so drunk on power that they can't let it go. Even in stupid little county commissioner jobs like here in Osage, Oklahoma, I had to work to unseat an incumbent who wanted to hang on to the job so badly that he would do anything to retain it. And I've worked through the primary and the runoff to get him out of the way. And now I'm into a general election against the Democrat candidate.
Let's talk a little bit about what's going on nationally. On a scale of A to F, could you grade the Biden administration for us?
Oh, is F low enough? I mean, they're just awful.
That was kind of a softball, I must admit.
Your monologue was spot on. I mean, really, we actually are taking seriously an administration that appoints people to his cabinet because of the kind of sex that they want to engage in. I mean, that's the litmus test for getting a cabinet job in the White House. Buttigieg gets his job because he's a married homosexual, and then we have this nuclear energy guy that dresses in drag all the time. He got his job because of that. I mean, it's an administration that is the most misogynistic administration in the history of the United States. And I don't believe that's hyperbole. This is an administration that is literally telling women that they don't have the right to their own terms, their own scholarships, their own sports, their own facilities. Women don't have the right to anything any longer because a man can come along and, in the ultimate act of cultural appropriation, dress up in blackface, pretend to be a woman, wear exaggerated makeup and exaggerated costume, blackface a woman, and then this administration applauds that. And if you challenge any of this upside down misogyny, then you're the terrorist, you're the extremist, you're the nut job. I posted something, this is the, I posted something a day ago. It's a picture of an apple. That's all it is, a picture of an apple. It says, this is a banana. If you look at this and see an apple, then you're a right-wing extremist.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. And all good humor has a good element of truth to it. Good satire has to touch on the truth substantially or it's not funny. That little meme of saying, this is a banana, and if you see an apple, you're an extremist, it's spot on because that is no more absurd than to put a picture of a woman up there and say, this is a man. If you see a woman, then you're an extremist. It's crazy. It is literally insane. It is misogyny. It's insulting to women to the extreme. It's taking everything away from a woman, including not only her bathroom, her facilities, her shower, her scholarship, and her sport. It's taking away her dignity and even her identity and giving it to men who want to play dress up, make believe, and literally blackface women by dressing up in an exaggerated costume and makeup and pretending to be something they're not.
And yet women are being told that they can't be true feminists if they don't just blindly go along with this.
How can you be a feminist if you don't believe in the female? This is impossible. If you deny the feminine, I've got news for you. You're not a feminist. You can't be. But you have to have this discussion in our current environment today because I believe it all started with Bill Clinton when he said it depends on what the definition of is. We lost the definition of truth. We couldn't even define a common word like is, like that is a woman and that is a man, that is the truth and that is a lie. Bill Clinton said, well, it depends on what the definition of is. We lost the truth as a measuring rod of those things outside the truth that we're measuring or the lie that we're measuring. We lost the definition of truth. And therefore, we're now in a situation where Barack Obama comes along and he says, I'm going to fundamentally transform America. Well, he sure as heck did. We transformed it to the extent that we can't even tell what's male or female any longer.
And what's such an ironic subtlety here is that we're trying to ban the words male and female unless a male wants to call himself a female. But it begs the question, if you're looking inside of yourself and you're claiming you relate to some feminine quality, isn't that person in his own strange way admitting that there is such a thing as male and female anyway?
Exactly. These drag queen story hours are the extreme of what you just said. What is it what would drag queens celebrate? They celebrate what they are saying is the image of a woman. In other words, if you want to be a woman, you've got to have this kind of hair, this kind of makeup, these kind of shoes, this kind of dress. That's a woman. And none of that is masculine. All of it is exaggerated female characteristics. So they're admitting that there is a difference between a male and a female by dressing up in drag.
But you just can't talk about this difference if you really are a male or really are a female. Then you can't talk about it or use those terms. But if you're a male who wants to call himself a woman, then you can use the word feminine.
And not only are women losing, children are losing. We have completely, in our ultimate misogyny that I've already ranted about, we've degraded women to the point where they don't even exist any longer. And at the same time, we're dumbing down the definition of what it means to be a child. Because now we're telling a child that he is adult enough when he's 10 to decide that he's going to change his sex. Now, I've got a rhetorical question for everybody that's listening. If that child, if that person is adult enough to change his sex when he's 10, why isn't he also adult enough to decide what kind of sex to engage in when he's 10? My point here is we've moved the definition of children down so poorly and so badly and so drastically that we have gotten rid of the very concept of innocence, and therefore we're going to start very soon having discussions about consensual sex between minors and adults, because it doesn't make any difference anymore. We've just thrown the definition of children and innocence to the winds, because if that person can change his sex via surgery and hormones when he's 10, then why is our legal system going to come along and tell that same person that he or she can't engage in sex that they have defined as consensual? This is terrible in terms of basically eliminating the whole concept of the innocence of children.
Don't you think it's true that most Americans think this is utter nonsense and abhorrent, but because of the emperor's new clothes syndrome, they're just thinking, well, that's the conventional wisdom. There must be something wrong with me if I don't feel this way.
I do believe that there are still 10 righteous left in Sodom. I really do believe there are. But it's stunning. Even in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, supposedly the conservative bastion of the reddest of red states, Oklahoma, Bartlesville had in an open park last week, they had a drag queen performance in an open public park. And they advertised it as a family-friendly event with bouncy toys and everything out there in the park. They were handing out fake money to put in the G-strings of these drag queen performers. And children and their families, moms and dads, the families were at this event in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. But there were a number of us that had a fit. We spoke up and said, how is this right? We don't even need to quote the Bible here. All we need to do is say, women are real, they deserve dignity, and children should be treated like children, and we should protect their innocence. And so far, we've had about, close to 1,500 people in Bartlesville sign a petition saying this stuff has to stop. So maybe there are still 10 righteous left.
Yeah. Speaking of family-friendly, could you comment on the direction of the Walt Disney Company right now?
I'm sorry, folks. I would not take my kids to Disney. Well, let me back it up to Bartlesville. We have a local dentist that helps sponsor this drag queen event, and we have a local State Farm insurance agency that sponsored this event, as well as ConocoPhillips, Phillips 66, and a couple banks. I will not do business with these people. I just won't. I'm not going to spend my money at an institution or a company or a restaurant or a dentist office. I'm not going to spend my money at an institution that is that insulting and that degrading to other human beings. I won't do it.
And it seems that it's not even about the money anymore, because I think there are some stockbrokers of Disney that are getting concerned about this, but their creative team would rather pat themselves on the back regarding how woke they are. Disney's been bringing in subtle gay characters for a long, long time, but now they're just going for broke, or going for woke, I should say. They're claiming that 50% of their characters now, even in their animated movies, are going to be transsexual or bisexual.
Because apparently somebody thinks they have enough money to just keep throwing it down here with the intent of changing culture rather than making a profit. If they've got that kind of money, and maybe they do, the only solution is for enough people, the 10 righteous that are still left in Sodom, to rise up and say, no, here we stand. We can do no other. We're not going to permit this. We are going to continue to have a spine, have courage. We're going to speak in the public square, and we're going to call this stuff what it is. We're going to do what the Germans should have done, the German church should have done, during the rise of the Third Reich, when Dietrich Bonhoeffer challenged the church and said, not to speak is to speak, not to act is to act, silence in the face of evil is evil itself, God isn't going to hold us guiltless. We need to speak, we need to act, we need to recognize the sin of omission is as great as the sin of omission. We are obligated to engage in the public square, to protect women, to protect children, and to protect human dignity and freedom. And if we don't, we are going to have the sin and the curse on our heads, because we sat on our thumb and didn't do anything.
In that vein, where do you think the Church of America is regarding all of this right now?
Well, unfortunately, I think that the evangelical church is more interested in being woke than it is right. You and I have talked a lot about some of the holiness church denominations. And we've watched this last year, even the Southern Baptist Convention is unraveling with regard to a lot of the Black Lives Matter, critical race theory, and all of this stuff that they want to imbibe, and they want to dink around the edges and bring some of that stuff into the camp. So there's always a remnant. Jesus promised us that the gates of hell will not prevail against his church. We can take that promise to the bank. We know at the end of days that the church, the obedient followers of Jesus Christ, the true body of Christ will prevail and will win. But who is that today? It was not that long ago that you and I would have agreed that by and large, evangelicals were Bible-believing Christians who would stand firm on the inerrancy of Scripture, the infallibility of the Word, the sufficiency of the Bible. But that doesn't seem to be the case any longer, because I guess we need to assault the Bible with a little critical theory and a little neo-Marxism from Black Lives Matter in order to be true Christians today, at least in the minds of a lot of the superstar evangelical pastors.
Well, what's pathetic is I think most of the people would claim that they are still going by the Bible, even though they aren't. They just find these strange ways to reinterpret the verses that aren't convenient anymore. Like, well, Jesus was really about compassion, and they complete compassion with approval of a sinful lifestyle. It's not the same thing.
And it's the loss of the definition of the word with a capital W, as well as the definition of words. Again, I think of what Oz Guinness said, I believe, in his little book titled A Time for Truth. He said, truth is true even if no one believes it, and falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. Truth is true, and that's just the end of it, close quote. So the bottom line is, it's true even if no one believes it. Truth isn't a subjective construct. Truth is a revelation of God. It isn't a construct of man. And so many of our Christian colleges have bought into postmodern deconstruction, and then we reconstruct what we broke down into the image of the God we see in the mirror rather than the one we read about in the Bible. And I'm going to say it again, unfortunately, a lot of evangelical denominations have imbibed that Kool-Aid, and a lot of our seminarians, and therefore a lot of our pastors, come into the pulpit, into the church, with a lot of mushy, woke self-congratulation as opposed to a biblically grounded worldview.
And a lot of the woke organizations that for years were rallying against the Bible, calling it a horrible, chauvinistic, sexist book, they'll now turn and they'll quote from the Bible to get Christians on their side. You talk about your double standards, and Christians are falling for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Absolutely. In fact, I wrote an article, it's been some time ago, let's say a handful of months ago, for the Washington Times. I titled it, All of a Sudden the Left Loves Leviticus. And what was I talking about? The left loves to quote the passages out of Leviticus that tell us to care for the sojourner and the foreigner in our midst. They love Leviticus now when it comes to immigration and border policy. Oh, but they hate Leviticus when we start quoting it with regard to sexual morality.
Yeah,
sexual
just stay away from chapter 18 and all the sexual prohibitions.
Yeah. And frankly, on that issue in terms of, they love the passages on caring for the foreigner and the sojourner, not realizing that in the Hebrew language, the word for foreigner or sojourner was ger. I think you spell it G-H-E-R. It may be G-E-R. I can't remember. But there's a scholar out of Wheaton College that wrote on the distinction between the three words in Hebrew for foreigner and sojourner, and the one that is used for the legal immigrant is very different than the one that is used for the illegal immigrant. In other words, when Leviticus tells us to care for the foreigner in our midst, it's talking about the legal immigrant who has entered the country accepting the terms of the king, the terms of the country, being polite and honoring those standards, terms, and laws accordingly. That's who we are told to honor and accept, not the criminal who comes across the borders and wants to harm us.
Exactly. It was assuming that Israel was a sovereign country with borders, all that talk about the sojourner.
Yes. Ironic, isn't it, that Nehemiah was called to rebuild what? A wall. That was his charge.
Well, in Washington, they'll fall a wall in Tunisia. It's only when we want to build a wall here in the United States. It seems to me that you have three different levels of what's going on. You have people on the top who don't really care about any of this stuff. They just want to turn American against American so that we can crumble from within. In between, you have people that are really taking it seriously, that get seriously caught up in this. And then on the bottom level, you have a lot of people that know this is nonsense, but they're just too frightened to say anything. You put all those levels together and you have the recipe for becoming a dictatorial Marxist Nazi country.
I agree with what you're saying. I think you have some very nefarious people that know exactly what they're doing, and the only way to change America from being a free society is to deconstruct America. In other words, destroy America, tear it down. If you deconstruct your house, what does that mean? You demolish it, you tear it down, and then you build a new house in its place. And this movement in postmodernity from the left to deconstruct things, when they use that kind of language, we need to pay attention to what they're talking about, because really it's a synonym for destruction. They want to destroy the things that have made America what it is because they don't think that's good. They want to tear it down and build a socialist, a Marxist regime in its place. We know for a fact, you've covered it on your show, the very charter of Black Lives Matter declares that one of their primary goals is to queer the nuclear family and to dismantle, deconstruct patriarchal societies. So fatherhood, patriarchy, is bad. It needs to be deconstructed and dismantled, destroyed. And then we need to queer the nuclear family because any sexual distinctions whatsoever within our culture are bad things. This is not a recipe for freedom. This is a recipe for anarchy. And when you have anarchy, the vacuum will always be filled eventually with despotism and totalitarianism because somebody has to make sense out of the mess.
Yeah, changing definitions is one way to go about it. Instilling fear is another, the whole COVID thing. And I think that's what's going on with the Green New Deal. Can you comment on the whole global warming issue? I think this is a Trojan horse just to turn us into a socialist Marxist state myself.
Oh, there's no question. I don't know if you've had Cal Beisner on your show or not.
No, I haven't.
Great. Well, you need to. Cal Beisner is a fantastic scientist. I'll get you contact information after the show, Bob, if you want it.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is a fantastic scientist. He's a Christian thinker, and he takes on the whole green agenda, the whole global warming climate change agenda with science. And he points out the fallacies, the flaws, and the inconsistencies, and the actual hidden data, how they manipulate their data and how they try to push their narrative with pseudoscience rather than real science. I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to go into a lot of that right now. But the point is, there are people out there that help you understand this. And just pointing out the fact that the proponents of the global warming agenda are manipulating data. If I would have manipulated data in my defense of my doctorate at Michigan State University, guess what would have happened? I would have been laughed out of the room. I would have been expelled from the program, and I wouldn't carry a PhD. You can't do that. If you get caught manipulating your data to coincide with a preconceived desired agenda, it's called lying. It's called falsifying your data and your research. You're not a true scholar when you do that. And a lot of the global warming stuff is coming to us through purely contrived and manipulated data to support a narrative. Let's just take one thing. AOC and others will tell us that because we've got too many cattle in the plain state that are passing gas, you covered this in your monologues, that's contributing to global warming. All right. Well, the same people think we ought to go back to the good old days where we had about 50 million buffalo roaming the plain. You don't think they were passing gas? You don't think they were contributing to global warming? You think that was less of a problem than having a few Herefords and a few Black Angus roaming around in a rancher's backfield? I mean, they have no consistency and they know it. Their lunacy of blaming cows and horses and animals for contributing to global warming and then shutting down dairy farms and the ranching business in the Netherlands. I mean, they're serious about this. They're really doing this. They're trying to put the beef production business out of business because they're saying that contributes to climate change. This isn't about the climate. This is about power and control.
Controlling every facet of our lives, even to the point where they're telling us now to eat bugs and insects. And I love this one. They're saying because other cultures have done that for years. Well, what happened to cultural appropriation? I thought we weren't supposed to do that.
Yeah. And what happened to those other cultures that have been doing that? Most of them have died. Bjorn Lomborg is an economist that wrote a book a few years ago called Cool It. And he's not a right winger per se, but he is an economist who is telling the truth about the consequences of applying the global warming climate change proponents' agendas to the world economy. And in summary, he said millions and millions of people in the third world are going to die because economically we're going to consign them to burning whatever fuel they can find to cook and to keep warm. That fuel will be dirty. It will be wood. It will be dung. They will die of early respiratory diseases as the result of that. This is cruel. We're going to kill millions and millions of people through this global warming economic agenda. And he needs to be heard, and others are saying the same thing. You need to have Cal Bisner on your show.
Okay, yeah, let's get us together, please. I would love to. We have just a couple of minutes left, Everett. I want to quickly get your opinion of election integrity. I'm sure the district where you're running, it's going to be a fair election. But in general, with this election that's going on all over the country and the conservative hope of taking back Congress, given what happened in 2020, can we really trust the election integrity? What is your opinion?
You know, my gut tells me something is desperately wrong. When you look at the statistics and you listen to people that know how to analyze statistically what took place, it causes me great concern. But on the other hand, I've got conservative commentators that I believe and I trust, like Ben Shapiro and others, who say, yeah, we think there was fraud, but not enough to actually sway the election in an extreme fashion. I don't know, but I do know that there are great problems, even in small little places like Osage County, Oklahoma, because I've seen the registered Republican lists. I've gone door to door based on those registered Republicans, and I've gone to doors where nobody lives there. But yet there are three registered Republicans at that address. There's a problem here. What does that tell me? That the registration list isn't accurate. And if I start mailing ballots to those homes where nobody lives, all I need to do, if I'm a crook, if I'm a criminal, if I want to sway the election, all I need to do is figure out a system where somebody can go retrieve those ballots from those mailboxes and then send them back. You can do that very easily, and I'm running into it even here in Oklahoma.
Well, we're out of time. Everett Piper, it's always an honor to have you. I only wish I lived in Osage, Oklahoma, Osage County, Oklahoma, so that I could vote for you. But I hope you'll come back and join us again really soon.
Thanks a bunch, Bob.
All right. We'll see you next time, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.